So next week, again, next week is just all review. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'll be here same time, 8 to 9. Monday, going over the review sheet. Wednesday and Friday, going over the practice final. And I'll also have office hours next week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, kind of staggered. So if you can't make one day, hopefully you can make one of these other days. And I'll also post this on the website and on vSpace. And Tuesday and Thursday, I hope to try to spend some time at the SLC, probably in the morning. So if you're thinking of going to the SLC, I should be there hopefully sometime Tuesday and Thursday morning. But of course, there's other tutors there as well if I'm not there. Okay, so we're almost finished. Just have a few couple more things to talk about today. Just some applications of more applications of integrals. The last section in the book. This section, I think I mentioned, is not going to be so important. Really, there's only two specific types of applications that I'm going to specifically talk about today. These are the kinds of things that show up on the homework due on Tuesday, but not going to be so important for the final. The final will be more about just kind of, you know, computing integrals in general, or as far as applications go, kind of these area problems, but not really so much the types of applications that come in that final section. So on Monday, I'll say more specifically what types of applications you might have to be familiar with as far as integrals go. Okay, but so starting with one more example of an area problem. So two curves, question is just to find the area between these two curves. Okay, so these are the kinds of things we're doing on Wednesday. Right, step one is we have to figure out where these points intersect. These intersection points will give us kind of the bounds that we're going to use on our integrals when we integrate from what to what. These points are going to come from the intersections. And then if we end up with, say, more than two intersections, we'll have to determine which is the curve on top, which is the curve on the bottom over these different regions. So first step, again, let's just find the intersection points of these two curves. That amounts to setting the two y values equal to each other and solving for x. So first we set the two y values equal to each other. So y value for the first curve equals the y value for the second curve. Right, and then we're trying to solve for x. So let's move everything, say, to the left-hand side. Right, we'll have an x cubed minus a 1/2 x cubed. That'll leave us with just a 1/2 x cubed when we subtract. And then moving the 2x over, that'll just give us the minus 2x. So 1/2 x cubed minus 2x equals 0. Again, that just came from taking this entire right-hand side in that original equation, moving it over to the left-hand side. We can factor out an x. So x times 1/2 x squared minus 2 all equals 0. And so now we can solve, set each of these individual pieces equal to 0 separately. Right, so we'll get x equals 0 as one solution. X equals 0, that'll give us one intersection point. And then setting the whole second part equal to 0. But if you rewrite that, that'll be the same as x squared equals 4 when you multiply by 2 to get rid of this 1/2, move something to the other side. That's going to be x squared equals 4. Solving for x then will give us x equals negative 2 or positive 2. Okay, so x equals 0, x equals plus or minus 2. Those are the values of x then that are giving us the intersections. Okay. So we have three intersections, right? So this is going to be an example of something. I'm not going to draw these specific curves, but just to draw an example of something that might look like this is, again, maybe we have one curve looking like this, curve one, say, and then maybe we have another curve looking like this, right? So that's the kind of situation where we have three intersection points. Right, we're trying to find something like this area plus this area, that total area between those two curves. And the thing that's different here is that the curve that's on top over these two regions is going to be different. So for this first region, right, it's curve 2 that's on top. But for the second region, it's curve 1. So we'll have to use two different integrals to give us the areas of these two different pieces. Okay, so now we have to determine over each of these. So this would be something like x equals negative 2, the furthest left x value. This would be something like x equals 0, right, the middle x value. And this would be something like x equals 2, the rightmost x value. So over these two different intervals, we have to determine which is going to be the curve on top, which is going to be the curve on bottom. So right, first, if we look between negative 2 and 0, that's going to give us, right, this first region we're looking at. That might look something like this. All we have to do is take some value of x between those, plug that value of x in and see into the two curves and see which one gives us a larger y value. So between negative 2 and 0, let's plug in x equals negative 1, right, some value of x between those two. Plug that value back into the original curve, see which one gives us the larger y value. So that first curve, right, that'll give us negative 1 when we plug in x equals negative 1. Second curve, that's the 1/2 x cubed plus 2x. Right, if you plug a negative 1 into that, that'll give you a negative 1/2 minus 2. Negative 1/2 minus 2 is going to be negative 5/2. The point is that y value is smaller than the y value we got for the first curve. Right. So plugging in this x value into these two curves gives us negative 1 for the first curve, negative 5/2 for the second curve. Negative 1 is larger than negative 5/2. So this first curve is the curve on top. Over this first region from x equals negative 2 to x equals 0. Okay. All right, questions? Okay. And then we do the same thing over the second region. So between 0 and 2 now. Again, we take some value of x between there, x equals 1. Pretty simple choice. All right, plug that value into the two curves, see which one again gives us the larger y value. So the first curve, y equals x cubed. That'll give us y equals positive 1. The second curve, this 1/2 x cubed plus 2x. That'll give us 1/2 plus 2, positive 5/2. 5/2 is larger than 1. So in this case, the second curve is going to be the curve on top over this region over here. Okay. So in this picture that we drew, right, we're saying if I call the y equals x cubed 2, if I call this second curve 1, then that kind of matches the picture I drew here, right? Over this first piece between negative 2 and 0, it's the 2 curve that's on top, the y equals x cubed, whereas over that second piece between 0 and 2, it's the 1 curve that's on top. Okay. So we have our intersections. We figured out over between these different intersections what's going to be the curve on top, what's going to be the curve on the bottom. And so now we can set up integrals to give us this total area, right? So we're going to set up an integral that'll give us this area of this first piece, an integral to give us the area of the second piece, add that together, that'll give us then the total area. Okay, so just to be clear, let me denote this first region by Roman numeral 1 and the second region by 2. We're going to write down integrals that give us those two different areas. Okay. All right, so finally then the area between these two curves that we're looking for. So first, an integral that will give us the area of this first region, Roman numeral 1. So that occurs, again, between x equals negative 2 and x equals 0. So that's going to give us the bounds here that we're going to use on our integral, negative 2 to 0. And then what are we going to integrate? As we see before, we're going to integrate the equation for the top curve minus the equation for the bottom curve. Right. So over that region 1, it's the y equals x cubed. We saw that was on top. So equation for the top curve, x cubed, minus equation for the bottom curve, which over that first piece was this 1/2 x cubed minus plus 2x. So top curve minus bottom curve right, that whole integral then will give us the area of that region 1. And then, so this is area of 1. Same thing for the second region, this region that I'm denoting by Roman numeral 2. So that occurs between x equals 0, x equals 2. So 0 to 2 give us the bounds on that second integral. Same thing, equation for the top curve minus equation for the bottom curve over that second region. But in that case, the top curve is this 1/2 x cubed plus 2x. Top curve minus the bottom curve over that second region, which is the y equals x cubed, so just minus x cubed. That integral then gives us the area of region 2. Okay, and adding those together, we're saying adding those together will give us the full area between those two curves, area of region 1 plus area of region 2. Okay, so let me stop here. At this point, it's not going to just amount to computing these two integrals. You could do some simplification, right? For example, this x cubed minus 1/2 x cubed, that you can simplify to just 1/2 x cubed. So this whole first piece will really be 1/2 x cubed minus 2x, integral of that function. And the second piece, you have this 1/2 x cubed minus x cubed. So this piece you can simplify to negative 1/2 x cubed plus 2x. Okay, so that's just a matter of simplifying these functions inside. And the last thing to do after that would be to actually then go ahead and compute those two integrals, which I'll leave to you. But at least there is setting up, right, an expression that will give us the area between these two curves that we're looking for. Okay, questions? Okay, so again, there's some homework problems like this. There's one homework problem where you're given three curves and has to find the area between three curves. You're given some picture. I think that's a nice example to go through, but nothing like that on the final. Most complicated kind of area computation on the final might be something like this, where you have two curves that might have three intersection points. Nothing more complicated than that. Okay. So all right, so this last section then, section 6.5, is just talking about some further applications of integrals. There's a lot of applications given in there. I just want to give some examples of the two that will show up on the homework. So first is the notion of the average value of a function. Again, section 6, the first example given in section 6.5. So I just want to, I'll give you the general formula, and then we'll look at one example of actually applying this. The point is, after you know the formula, it's just a matter of plugging things in and then computing whatever integral you're asked to compute at the end. So general formula, we're saying we have some function over some interval, average value of a function over some interval, say from A to B, right? So some interval x equals a to x equals b. We're asking what's the average value of this function over that interval. Here's what it's going to be. So I'll write this down and then just say a bit about where it comes from. Right. It'll just be 1 over b minus a times the integral of the function itself over that interval, integral from a to b of that function. Okay. So this is what we call the average value of the function over that interval. Okay, so it's just a matter of if you know this formula, then you can just plug whatever function you have into that, and just compute that resulting integral. So just to say one thing about where this comes from, why are we calling this average value? Right. So how do you compute an average in general? If you have six numbers, how do you find the average of six numbers? You add up those numbers all together, and then you divide by six. You divide by the total number of things you have. So in general, to find an average, you add up all of your things. You divide by the total number of things you have. That result is going to be the average, and that's kind of how to think about this integral here. The integral piece you should kind of think of as adding together all of the values of the function. So that's what the integral here is supposed to be analogous to, adding together the values of the function, and then we're dividing by how many values we have. In other words, we're dividing by the length of this interval that we're looking at this function over. So this 1 over b minus a, that's kind of analogous to dividing by how many things you have. This integral is analogous to adding together the values of all the things you have, and that's kind of some sense in why this is going to be considered an average. If you're interested, the book has a little bit more detailed explanation. But for us, we're just going to take this definition of average and use it to compute some averages. Okay, so we'll look at one example. One example of computing some average value. Okay. So setup is $100. It's deposited into some savings account. An account earning 5% annual interest. Compounded continuously. So this is going to be an example of some use of this notion of continuously compounded interest that we saw back as an example in chapter 5. 5% interest compounded. Continuously. And the question is going to be to find the average balance in this account over 10 years. Okay. Okay, so find the average balance in the account over 10 years. Okay. So over 10 years, this balance is going to grow. Starting at 100, it'll finish at some value. We're asking on average how much money was in the account at each point over those 10 years. Okay, so this is again going to amount to computing some kind of integral. We're looking at a time range of 10 years, so t equals 0 to t equals 10 years. Let me just write that down, t equals 0 to t equals 10. That's what's giving us, right, the interval, the range that we're looking for this average over. At the end, that's what's going to give us right, the bounds and the integral we're going to use. That's what's also going to give us this this constant down in front. Right, the last question is what function are we actually considering? Well, we're looking for the function that's going to give us the balance in this account at any point in time. And we saw before in chapter 5 that if we're looking at continuously compounded interest, this function giving us the balance is going to be some kind of exponential function. Okay, so the first thing we'll do is write down the actual function that's giving us the balance with 100% initial deposit, 5% interest, compounded continuously. Okay. Okay, so the balance, right, the balance at time t, I think before we were calling that function a of t. Right, so if you think back to continuously compounded interest, this is going to be some function, some exponential function that we were writing like this, some number p times e to the rt, right, where are these numbers? P was going to be exactly the initial balance. Right, if you plug in t equals 0, you'll have p times e to the 0. That's just going to be p times 1. P, in other words, is the balance at time 0. That's what we're saying is going to be 100. And this r here, the r is whatever the interest rate is supposed to be. Okay, so here's the general formula for, you know, balance when we're looking at some continuously compounded interest situation. In our specific case, this is going to be 100, right? The initial balance, e times e to the power of the interest rate times t, 5% is 0.05. So 100 times e to the 0.05 times t, that's the function then that's giving us the balance at time t. Okay. So this part at least, right, this part of the problem is something that that you would definitely have to be aware of for the final. There could definitely be some problems on the final dealing with continuously compounded interest, even if it's not coming from this section in the book, but previous problems we saw dealing with this kind of situation. Okay, questions so far? Okay. All right. So now we can figure out this average balance that we're looking for. This average balance over 10 years then right, we have the general formula, 1 over b minus a. So again, b and a and b are supposed to give us the range that we're considering. In this case, 0 to 10 years. So 1 over 10 minus 0 in our case. 1 over 10, that's going to be that constant down in front. Right? And then integral over that range, over that time range, in our case, 0 to 10 years again, integrating the function giving us the balance. So 1 over 10 times integral from 0 to 10 of this function that we just figured out, 100 e to the 0.05 times t. Okay, so that expression then is going to give us this average balance that we're looking for. Again, it's just a matter of plugging things into that general formula, and then actually going ahead and computing the integral that we want. Okay, so let's just go ahead and do this then. Right, notice this 100. This is just some constant. We can just pull that outside. So if we pull that outside, we'll have 100 over 10. That'll give us the 10 in front. So let me just kind of do that in one step. I'm going to pull this 100 outside. So that'll give us 100 out here. 100 over 10 will just give us 10. But let me. So I'll put that in the next line. 10. That's that constant down in front. And then we need an antiderivative of e to the 0.05 t. Take that antiderivative, plug in 10, plug in 0, and subtract. So antiderivative of e to the 0.05 t, exponential, that antiderivative first will have to have that same expression inside of it. So the antiderivative will have that same e to the 0.05 times t. But if we take that derivative, that'll give us an extra 0.05 out in front, whereas we don't want any extra constant in front here, so we should have a 1 over 0.05 already here, so that when that 0.05 comes down from that exponent, that'll cancel out with that and just leave us with a constant 1 out in front here. Okay, so we're saying antiderivative of e to the 0.05 t, that's going to be 1 over 0.05 times e to the 0.05 t. And then we're going to evaluate at 10, evaluate at 0, and subtract those two values. Okay, so. So last thing then, just to plug in these values and subtract. All right, so we'll plug 10 first in for t. So we have that 10 over 0.05 in front, e to the 0.05 times 10. 0.05 times 10 is going to be 0.5, or 1/2. So that'll give us an e to the 1/2 when we plug in the 10 in for t. Right? And then minus what we get when we plug in the 0. So plug in the 0. Again, we'll have that 10 over 0.05. E to the zero will be 1, so we'll just be left with this. Okay, so let me just write this one more way. Just factoring out this 10 over 0.05 out of each term, 10 over 0.05 all times square root of e, that's the first part, and then minus 1. Okay, so we're saying that's going to be then what we're looking for, the average balance in our account after over 10 years. And if you put that into a calculator to get some actual numerical value, that'll be about 129.74. Okay, so initial deposit of $100, 5% interest compounded continuously. On average, over the next 10 years, we'll have about $129.74 in our account on average. Okay. Any questions? Yeah. Where does average balance? Where did the 10 in the denominator? So the 10 over the denominator, right, if we come back to this average value, first thing we have here is this constant 1 over b minus a. B and a are the values giving us the range that we're considering. So in our case, that's 1 over 10 minus 0. That's the 1 over 10 that we had out there in front. All right, so here's what we had to begin with, that 1 over 10. And then integrating the function, all I'm saying is that this constant 100 here, we can just pull that outside of the integral, and that gave us that 100 over 10 that I had there before. And that 100 over 10, that's this 10 that shows up down here. Okay, so I mean that's just a matter of, you know, doing a little bit of simplification. This is really the important formula for us. Okay, other questions? Okay, so again, this isn't a formula that you would have to, you know, this average value formula isn't something that you would have to have memorized for the final. But, you know, this integral, after you plug things in, this integral that you get at the end down here, that's an integral that you should be able to compute. It might show up in some other kinds of problems, not specifically ones dealing with this kind of average value. Okay, so again, there's some average value problems on the homework. You know, here's the formula, just a matter of plugging in the right things into that formula and then computing the resulting integral. But not something you'd have to have memorized for the final. And the last application I'll mention as an application to volume. Also coming from this same section, 6.5. So this is what's called the volume of a solid revolution. So the setup is, so let me try to squeeze a picture into here. So the setup is I have some function, some values of x down here, a to b, and say some function maybe that looks like this. I'm not going to be able to fit this on here. Okay, so volume of the solid of revolution. Okay, so here's the general setup again. We have some function f of x. We're looking at some range of x values, say x equals a to x equals b. And we're asking for the volume. So I'll say this in words and then draw a picture of what this means. Volume of the solid obtained by revolving this function around the x-axis. So the picture is, so I start with my function looking something like this, right, over these values, x equals a to x equals b. And the idea is now imagine if we take this curve, and we're going to rotate it all the way around the x-axis. So we're going to take this entire picture and just rotate the thing, you know, out of the board, rotate the whole thing around this x-axis. So if you know, kind of hard to draw, but if you try to imagine it, this, you know, rotating this curve is going to sweep out some kind of shape. It's going to sweep out something that looks like this. You know, we have this opening here on this side. We have an opening over here on this side. This is supposed to be some kind of, imagine as some kind of surface you get by taking this curve again on top and rotating it all the way around the x-axis. And the question we're asking for is, what's the volume that's enclosed by that surface? So inside of here, then, there's some region enclosed by that surface. We're asking, what is its volume going to be? Okay. And again, there's a formula for this that's going to tell us how to compute this. The formula is this volume is going to be nothing but, so we integrate the function. Yeah. We're rotating it out of the board around the x-axis. Yeah, it's kind of hard to draw a picture. I'm sure the book has better pictures of this drawing. So this volume is going to be gotten by taking the integral from a to b, integral over the values of x that we're looking at. In our case, x equals a to x equals b, say. And then pi times the function squared, the integral of that, that's going to give us this volume. Okay. So again, to save time, I'm not going to explain where this formula comes from. Again, you can check the book if you're really interested, where they have an explanation of why this formula is going to give us the right answer, right? But for us, the point is all we have to do is take the function we're looking at, plug that function into here, square it, and then integrate that result over these values of x. Okay. So let's take one example then of this. So I'm going to take the function square root of 1 minus x squared. between x equals negative 1 and x equals 1. Okay. So let me just try to redraw the same picture for this function. So this function, if you graph it, will look like this. It'll look like just exactly the top half of a circle between negative 1 and 1. Right? And we're saying if we take this top half of the circle, you know, pull it out of the board, rotate it all around the x-axis, imagine that's going to exactly trace out a sphere. So if we take this top half of the circle, you know, rotate it all the way around the x-axis, that's going to give us exactly a sphere of radius 1. And we're asking, how do we find the volume of that sphere? So rotating this around the x-axis, in our case, will just give a sphere. Right, we're asking, how do we find the volume of that sphere? The point is, you know, we don't actually have to visualize what that surface will look like. All we're going to do is take this general formula, plug in our function, and compute the integral. Okay, but it's nice to know that at least in this specific example, what we're actually doing is finding the volume of a sphere. Okay, so questions about the setup? All right. So the volume we get, in our case, again, the volume of the sphere of radius 1, right? This is just going to be given by the integral, right? A to B, those are the bounds on x, negative 1 to 1 in our case. So integral negative 1 to 1, pi times our function squared, right? F of x squared, if we take our function that we have written up there and square it, that'll get rid of the square root, and just leave us with pi times 1 minus x squared. Okay, so again, just taking integral a to b, the bounds on x that we're looking at, negative 1 to 1 in this case, pi times our function squared, and all we're seeing is that if we square the specific function, that'll get rid of the square root and just leave us with this 1 minus x squared. Okay, so now we're left computing this integral. Let's just do the first step right now. In other words, finding an antiderivative of this function. So the pi here, the pi is just some constant out in front. That I'm just going to leave alone. That'll just kind of tag along when we write down the antiderivative. And now we need an antiderivative of 1 minus x squared. Right? So to get the 1, we need an x. To get an x squared, first of all, to get an x squared, we need something that'll have an x cubed in it. So to get the x squared, we'll need an x cubed. But then we have to think about what are the constants that we need in front to give us with this negative 1 after we take the derivative. So if we take the derivative of x cubed, that'll give us a 3x squared. So if we want to end up with just a negative 1, that means we should have a negative 1 over 3 already in front. Okay. So antiderivative of 1 minus x squared is x minus 1 third x cubed, and then we're going to evaluate that between 1 and negative 1. In other words, plug in 1 into that antiderivative, plug in negative 1, subtract those two values. Let me just give you the answer. You'll end up with 4 thirds pi when you plug those in. 4 thirds pi is the volume of a sphere of radius 1. Okay, questions? All right, so, you know, again, I'm not going to expect you to have this formula memorized for the final, but at least, you know, this step here, after you plug in these functions, being able to compute this integral, that computation is something that you should definitely be able to do. That kind of computation could show up at some other points in the final, even, again, if it's not specifically coming from this type of problem from this section. Okay, other questions? Okay, so these are only two kinds of applications from this section in the homework. But again, neither of these will be much of an emphasis on the final. But at least the computations are something you should be able to do as far as computing integrals goes. Okay, so one last order of business then. I see that Ben is up there, one of the GSIs. So teaching evaluations, I'll help Ben pass them out. When you're finished, maybe just leave them up on the front stage, and Ben will collect them and take them to the math office. It's been a pleasure, and I hope to see you next week in the review and on the final as well.